It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Is high ball four. Doug Hodo draws a bases loaded walk. He'll be credited with an RBI. Mike Antico trots home from third, and the Longhorns take a 1-0 lead. 2-2 pitch. Subia swings and lines into left field, a base hit. Trotting in to score is Antico. Rounding second, heading for third is Daly. Zach Zubia comes through again. An RBI single extends the Texas lead to 3-0. From Arnold to Williams. And he swings and lines it to center field, a base hit. Scoring from third is Daly. Zubia around third, being waved to the plate. The throw cut off. They'll go to third, and out by a mile is Melendez at third base. Up to second on the throw goes Cam Williams. The Longhorns score two more runs on the play, and they lead it 5-0. Stretch in the pitch. Swung on, and that ball's hit well toward the alley. And that is going to fall in the gap, and it should clear him off. Hono around second. He's thinking three. He will go for three. He will get three, or will he? Yes! Hit first slide with an RBI triple to score three. The Longhorns have blown this one wide open, and Texas leads it 10-0. 1-2 the count. Here's the stretch. The 1-2 from Hanson. Swing and a miss. Struck out Pagliarina. It's a new strikeout high for Pete Hanson. 13 strikeouts. Here's a pitch. Hit on the ground to first. Up with it. Stepping on the back. Murphy Staley. That ends the ball game. The Texas Longhorns in dominant fashion sweep through the Austin Regional, scoring double-digit runs in all three ball games. The Longhorns win this one over Fairfield 12-2, and Texas will be at home to host the Super Regionals. And with that in mind, Texas is on to the Sweet 16 of college baseball, the Super Regionals that'll begin this week in Austin. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, digital, on the Horn app at hornfm.com. Also, happy to have those of you availing yourselves of Twitch to view our proceedings here on the program. My name is Craig Way. So glad to have you with us. It is kind of a Texas fight Monday morning as they are through to the Super Regional round. My co-host, Jeff Howe, will be along momentarily. Jeff will joining us here. And then, of course, our man behind the glass, the erstwhile producer and majordomo of all things Flex ATX and the Thursday Night Flex here on the Horn, the one and only Jonathan John Donaldson, J.J. Donaldson. We know him as Snoop Daniel. Good morning, Snooper. How are you?
Great. Watched that stupid Mayweather-Logan Paul fight and listened to some Longhorn baseball last night.
Okay, so it was the fight that was stupid, is what
it was.
You're saying. You know, that's like the it's like the line in Saturday Night Live when Jennifer Aniston is the guest host, and it's the skit Nick Burns, your company's computer guy, the one that's got the attitude, has always got to fix people's computer problems. He goes over and she's, oh, and he goes, what's your problem? And it's Jimmy Fallon playing her. What's your problem? And she goes, oh, this stupid computer won't work right. And he goes, oh, it's the computer that's stupid, huh? So,
it's the fight that was stupid.
You didn't pay for the fight, did you?
In a roundabout way, I did, because I paid admission, which is probably not right for them to charge admission, but I did. $20.
And you fell for that.
It was, I don't know. I can't even, the words, it's just like, they didn't want to hurt each other.
Isn't that usually how all of Floyd Mayweather's quote-unquote exhibition fights are?
I guess
he's
so.
He's like, nobody's going to get hurt here, okay? We're going to dance around for 8 rounds or whatever, swap a few blows. One or two may look, you know, pretty impressive, but nobody's really going to get seriously injured. And we're going to walk out of here with tens of millions of dollars, right? Nice work if you can get it. And he can get it. And you fell for it. So it was the fight that was stupid is what you're saying.
Man.
Okay, all right, all right. That's all right. I'm giving you some good-natured grief about that. So there is a lot to unpack from the weekend. Speaking of stupid, Dallas Mavericks performance, late third quarter, on into the fourth, 24-4 run. You know, if you're a Mavericks fan, you had to be unhappy with that.
Well, it's been over a decade since they've won a series, and I thought we had this one. Not going to lie.
Such a bizarre, strange series where, for the first time in NBA history, the road team won each of the first six games. So you start from that baseline. It was weird. Then, given the fact that the Mavericks, you know, had a chance to finish it at home, couldn't do it, just kind of had a feeling of foreboding going into that sixth game. And yet, there they were with a six-point lead in the third quarter, and then it all just kind of melted away there in the midst of the 24-4 run by the Clippers. So that got knocked out. And the bizarre weekend at the Memorial Tournament, John Rahm has a six-shot lead after three rounds. And then, sorry, COVID, let that be a lesson to you, Snoop Daniel. You know, I'm just saying, if you're going there. Now, from what I understand, Rahm actually did get the vaccine, but before he did, he had come in contact with somebody there.
God.
So disappointing for him, but was it Will Muschamp when he was defensive coordinator and then later head coach in waiting at Texas used to say, one man's misfortune is another man's opportunity. So it was either that or never rub another man's rhubarb. No, that was Jack Nicholson as the Joker in Batman. Never mind. So, Patrick Cantlay got the win as a result of that. And then there were other topics to get to, and we'll do that as well. Coming up this morning on the program, it'll be in the 11 o'clock hour. David Pierce will join us, the Longhorns head coach, as Texas advanced to the NCAA Super Regional. Now, the fun begins for those who either don't have a dog in the fight, meaning a team to root for in the Super Regionals, or your team, in the case of Texas and Vanderbilt and Notre Dame and Arizona, and the half of the field which has already been set, they just sit back and wait on their opponent for the Sweet 16, for the Super Regional round. I say Sweet 16, if people may be throwing him off. Remember, there are 16 teams left after this weekend, so the Super Regionals, in effect, are a Sweet 16, because then it's trimmed to 8, and those 8 advance to Omaha for the College World Series. So half of the field for the Super Regionals complete, but the other half not, and that is through a combination of if-necessary games and weather, and it knocked out some games. In fact, in Starkville, Mississippi, they're just today starting their bracket championship or their regional championship between the number 7 national seed, Mississippi State, and the Fighting Camels of Campbell University, who've got there. That's one of the underdogs. Snoop, can you, quick geography quiz, can you tell me where Campbell University is?
Pittsburgh.
Not a bad guess. Not correct. Campbell University is in Buies Creek, B-U-I-E-S, Buies Creek, North Carolina. It's a little bit north of Fayetteville. And it's a small private school. It became known for having the first real heavy-duty basketball camps going on all the way back in the 60s. John Wooden used to go there and guest lecture and things like that and evaluate and things of that nature. But Campbell won a survival game 19-10 over when they won their survival game over VCU to get to the championship round. They're going to have to beat Mississippi State twice, and I don't know that that's possible. They may be in the same boat that Fairfield was in last night. That said, they were able to rest anyway overnight. They didn't have to turn right around and play, but they would have to win back-to-back games to do it. So we're just getting to the tip of the iceberg on all of that. Meanwhile, our co-host is into the fray now. He's the pride of Northwest Williamson County and a proud graduate of Florence High School. I guess they probably just recently had their high school graduation there.
Yeah, Craig, not staying abreast of news in Florence, Texas, USA, but congratulations to all the young men and women who did matriculate through Florence High School.
Did they graduate in the football stadium like you did, Stadium?
I would think so. It's the largest venue in town, so mm-hmm. It's probably the only venue in town. Well, no, I don't think they're hosting many graduations at the Vineyard, but
the Vineyard.
Nonetheless, there's a Vineyard, apparently a really nice Vineyard.
I think they should just gather them all on the front porch of the Andy's General Store.
You notice the Vineyard, I believe, is on 487, and it's mm-hmm. the Vineyard at Florence, so they put it on the good side of 487.
Here we go again.
Fewer outhouses on this end.
The gauntlet has been thrown down to our friends in Gerald over that. The rivalry rekindled. Anyway, it's Jeff Howe, and you know him best for his outstanding work in Horns 24/7. And busy weekend on the football recruiting front.
Mike Roach coming up by under the hour. We will recap all of it. Also going to get into in the second hour. Going to get into a little more Longhorn football talk, some transfer news. We'll talk about the Keelan Robinson transfer, what it means, where is Texas on transfers. We'll talk about all of that in hour number two, in addition to our conversation with David Pierce. And as a teaser for tomorrow, Craig, because yes. I want to have a chance to really read this and break it down and digest what it means, my favorite article every year from our national sports desk at 24/7 Sports was published this morning.
Really?
And that is Chris Hummer's development rating study. He tracks player development. He's figured out a way to quantify it. Who are the best and worst programs in the country at developing blue chip talent? And Texas typically has been at the bottom of that list, but there's a school ranked below Texas. I'll tease it for tomorrow. There's a school ranked below Texas that proves my point that I believe Texas and this other program are the two most just chronically underachieving programs in the country from where they should be to where they habitually are.
Interesting. And I'm really intrigued by the vetting process that he did to quantify, to be able to categorize how the development or lack thereof process works.
Yeah, like I said, you can go to 24/7 Sports and get that article right now. It's too much for me to go through today because we mm-hmm. got a loaded show, so I want to make sure. And we might have Chris pop on tomorrow.
Okay.
For one of the notebook segments, might see if he can and explain some rationale. But it's my favorite article that Chris does every year. And Chris does a great job throughout the season. And props to anybody who covered college sports in the last year with all the COVID restrictions and everything else.
But right.
This is my favorite thing Chris does every year.
Very good. All right. We'll get to all that as well. We do have Inconceivable later on this hour. And as we mentioned in the second hour of the program, and it'll be toward the back half of the hour, David Pierce will be joining us. He's taking care of some business wrapping up this morning, and then he will join us in the back half of the 11 o'clock hour. So we'll look forward to visiting with Coach Pierce. Okay, you were there in the late night hours as I was mm-hmm. Last night for that. I heard you on with Bucky and Aaron this morning. I think you echoed a lot of the same things I thought about how the complete and thorough way with which the Longhorns executed their business of the weekend.
You get 17 free passes, Craig. You're going to be in good shape to win quite a few baseball games. I just felt like, look, there's a couple of things I think you can really take away. Aside from the fact that, you know, that Arizona State team, we've seen better Arizona State teams in the NCAA tournament through the years.
Mm-hmm.
And Fairfield, that was not an accurate representation of the kind of year Fairfield had, what we saw last night. One, because we knew they were going into the tournament without Mike Caruso, their All-American catcher, who, gosh, it still pains me to say it, broke his jaw last week when he got hit by a pitch in practice. It's just a brutal way for him to not be able to finish a great season. But when you're a program like Fairfield and you talk about pitching depth and it's just not there, last night we saw the impact of four games in 3 days. It's just not going to be there. I thought last night it rounded out a weekend, Craig, where we saw the offense. And this, to me, this regional, offensively, was all about how David Pierce has wanted to build this program from day one. He's wanted a club that can score in multiple ways. We saw in the Southern game, it was Ivan Melendez and Cam Williams with the big home runs. a little bit of everything in the Arizona State game. And then last night, they got the bunt game involved. They were patient. They took their walks. And they got a couple of big hits, the Zubia blow, the Hodo triple.
Three dudes hit by pitches.
Yeah, but I just I felt like it was just last night was a great example of patience and not being aggressive, putting the ball in play, letting an inexperienced pitcher maybe get some confidence and get rolling, make him throw strikes, and, you know, whether it was, you know, Urbeck or whoever Fairfield went with last night, finding the strike zone was an issue. So I like the patience offensively, and now we're seeing that this is a team that can score in multiple ways. And two, Craig, there are not enough superlatives to say when you talk about the starting pitching staff. I mean, I go back to when we had Kendall Rogers on from D1Baseball.com. Kendall was on with us a couple of weeks ago. I think it was before that West Virginia series to wrap up the regular season. And he felt like, you know, other than Vanderbilt, well, obviously when you're rolling out Jack Leiter and Kamar Rocker, you're not going to find a better 1-2 punch in the country, that there might not be a better three-person, a better three-man rotation than what Texas can do in a setup like this, going, in this case, from Tristan Stevens to Ty Madden to Pete Hansen. And to tell you the truth, Craig, I was, in a tournament format, I've been more worried about the regional than I have the super regional. And I know that might catch some people off guard and say, well, you know, why? The super regional, you figure you're going to play better competition. But, man, all it takes is just one off day to get into the loser's bracket. And when you get into the loser's bracket of a regional, it
is. Boy, are you swimming upstream.
Yeah, it is really, really tough to get. And like we saw in the Big 12 tournament, once you get past those three, even if you're Texas and you've got a deep staff, by the time Texas got to a fourth starter in the Big 12 tournament, you're still kind of piecing it together and seeing who can give you innings. Because at that point, if you've lost a game, chances are you've either burned through or have put a lot of wear on a couple of your bullpen arms. So it couldn't have set up better for Texas than it did yesterday. And even being able to get Cole Quintanilla an inning, they got Aaron Nixon an inning, Lucas Gordon got a batter, and that was kind of a bonus for David Peters. He told us after the game, he said he really wanted to get Gordon in, didn't know if he was going to be able to. And, you know, they got him one batter, which was one more than maybe they'd hoped he would get. So thumbs up there. Just all around, if you're a Texas baseball fan, you've just got to be really, really happy with where this team is right now and what they did this weekend.
I mentioned this on the broadcast, and we've mentioned it on the show here, and it's a really curious dynamic. And yet the more I see it, and it includes this year's regionals, the more I am now convinced of it. I shouldn't have needed to see it. I should have just taken the late Augie Garrido's word at face value. Same thing with our good friend and broadcast partner, Keith Moreland. Their belief that if you are going to lose in a double elimination tournament, it's best to lose your first game and not your second game. And I'm like, when you first hear that, you already got a win under Bell. Why would you want it? And the very reason, there's two or three reasons for it. One, when you lose the first game, you know you're in a game against another team that has lost, so it's probably not as high level a team that you're going to face in third. So you have a chance to get some momentum going and get underfoot.
Right.
Secondly, if you lose the second game, you're in the same boat that you're in with the first, the team that lost the first. You're still playing an elimination game on Sunday. You still will have played two games, and you're still eliminated. Now, sure, if you lose that first game, you lose the second one on Saturday, you're done. Ask Florida, and you're out. But if you do win that, then you're really kind of in a better spot because you lose that winner's bracket game on almost every time. It's Saturday night. You got to have a quick turnaround to Sunday. Arizona State had that yesterday, jumped to a 5-0 lead, and then their pitching just you know, hit the wall. And Fairfield was able to fight back, and they were able to get the win. To your point, this was probably not the complete representation of the Fairfield team that won their first 28 games of the year and was 37-3 going into the tournament. They didn't have Mike Caruso, their leading hitter and player of the year in the Metro Atlantic Conference this year. But once you get into that loser's bracket, you're really fighting to survive at that point. And then Arizona State couldn't get it together pitching wise, and Fairfield was able to overcome them and get to the championship round. So there's that, but it's just living proof that it's hard, really hard, if you get into the loser's bracket. That's why David Pierce told me on Saturday. He said we are holding nothing back. We will roll out every gun that we have to roll out, so to speak, the big guns to get us to Sunday. He understood that the importance of that and has understood it for years. And said, we've got to get to Sunday. We got to get to 2-0 because then you stay on schedule, as you pointed out, and that's what they were able to do.
Yeah, and I think Fairfield, it just looked like a team, Craig, especially, I don't know if anybody stepped outside yesterday about 1 o'clock, but to play 9 innings in that weather and then have to come back and do it again last night, they just looked like a team that was just that flat out of gas.
They loaded the team on the bus after the come-from-behind win because they were down 5-0, as I mentioned. And then they were down 5-2. Then it was 6-2, 6-4, 6-6. And then, by the way, who among you out there, I don't know if Snoop saw it, saw the accidental hidden ball trick that happened in the game yesterday? Did you see it, Snoop? Did you see that? Did you see what happened there? You had a runner on third base for Arizona State, Fairfield pitcher on the mound, fires a pitch in, catcher goes to catch it, swing and a miss, and the ball disappears. And no one can find it. And we're looking around, and I said it was like it vanished into thin air. And then Roger on the broadcast, when I was explaining it, said, let me play the part of, and I forgot the guy's name. You know him on NBC on Dateline with the guy, the mystery thing, where he goes, or did it?
Oh.
and the ball actually went into the pocket of the home plate umpire. They couldn't find it at first.
Huh.
And then the umpire pulls, oh, here it is.
He did something.
The runner on third had started to break for home, and then they stopped him, and then the umpire then awarded him home plate, which put Arizona State back in front of the time, 7-6. Can you imagine if that had been the game, the run that had decided the game? And the way that the rule reads, and in talking with Coach Pierce, Roger and I were before the game after the Fairfield win over Arizona State, we were visiting with Coach Pierce before the game yesterday, and he said the umpire interpreted the rule correctly because the way the rule is written is this, and we know this. If an umpire is hit by a batted ball, fans cheer. No, they shouldn't do that. But anyway, if an umpire is hit by a batted ball, a couple of things happen. One, the play is ruled dead immediately. And second, the guy who hit the umpire with a batted ball is awarded first base. He's awarded a hit. If there are runners on bases, other than a force where they'd have to move up on the hit, they're not allowed an additional base. They have to go back to where they were, or if the runner was at first, he's entitled to second base, and that's it. Play is over, ball dead at that point. However, if it's not a batted ball, it's just like in football, where, and we've all seen it a dozen times, where a quarterback might throw the ball over the middle and it hits the back judge or the umpire there, and it's just dead. It winds up being an incomplete pass because they say the umpire is part of the field, or the official is part of the field, the football official is. Same thing in baseball, part of the field at that point. And so then he has the power to award a base on a wild pitch, and that's what it was. Fortunately, that was not the decisive run. Fairfield came back, we got a 3-run homer, and they went on to win it, so it becomes a footnote in history, but it was bizarre. It was a weird deal. Just to quickly do this before we get to the break, and then have Mike Roach on with us. For those of you wondering, okay, so what's happening now with regard to the Super Region? Well, the Longhorns are going to take on the winner of the elimination game between South Florida and South Alabama. South Florida is the big story, the 4 seed that stunned the top seed in that region, number 15 overall seed in the tournament, Florida, on Friday 5-3, and then beat Miami after that on Saturday to get to the championship. Meanwhile, South Alabama, out of the Sun Belt Conference, same league with Texas State, and a good program, lost 1-0 on Friday to Miami, came back and obliterated and eliminated Florida 19-1 on Saturday. They get to Sunday, South Alabama then eliminates the number 2 seed, Miami. So you have the 3 seed and the 4 seed playing for the right to come to Austin and play Texas. And South Alabama was up 4-0. In the 5th inning, the skies open, rain comes down, they have to stop play. So the game is going to start, they're going to resume the game in about 45 minutes in Gainesville. South Alabama up 4-0 in the 5th inning. If they win that game, they have to play one more for that. So that's where it is for Texas. I mentioned Mississippi State and Campbell. They started 11 o'clock this morning. That's just the first game of the regional final. They couldn't even get through because of all the rain in Mississippi. They were able to get through the elimination games with Campbell winning 19-10 late last night over VCU. So Campbell has to beat Mississippi State twice. Again, that's on the Texas side of the bracket. The 12 seed Ole Miss plays Southern Miss. That's at noon today. That is, all the rest of these games are if necessary. Dallas Baptist and Oregon State in Fort Worth. Notice I didn't say TCU. TCU knocked out of their own regional, number six national seed. To this point, they're the highest national seed to be eliminated. And that started with DBU's big five-run rally in the seventh on Saturday
night. There's always one top eight that doesn't make it through the weekend, Craig.
And will they be the only one? Did anybody see Nebraska beat Arkansas last night?
I'm not going to lie. I watched the end of it in the press box because that was more interesting than what was happening in front of me.
Understand that. Cornhuskers win 5-3. They've got to play one more time. 6 o'clock this evening. By the way, Dallas Baptist then played Oregon State after Oregon State eliminated TCU yesterday, 3-2. And it bears mentioning, Keith Moreland had pointed this out on the telecast, and it's true, where the vulnerability and underbelly of TCU's bullpen, Halen Green, their outstanding closer, for all of his outstanding work, doesn't hold runners very well. He hit a batter on his slider, batter reaches first, steals second, and got a great jump on it, and then it was a base hit and got him in, and that was the difference in the ballgame. TCU season's over, stunningly. So then Oregon State rallies back. They get a walk-off homer to lead off the bottom of the ninth to beat Dallas Baptist late last night 5-4. So now they have to play one more time in Fort Worth. 3 o'clock is the first pitch for that. I mentioned Arkansas. They have to play Nebraska at 6 o'clock tonight, winner take all. In Columbia, South Carolina, Old Dominion, the number one seed there, number 11 overall seed. But remember, they were a one seed on the road. South Carolina was hosting that. South Carolina's not alive anymore. Virginia knocked them out yesterday. And then Virginia beat Old Dominion last night. They play at 6 o'clock tonight. And that, by the way, has brought up a lot of questions. Folks said, well, what happens? Who gets to host the Super Regional? Here's the wrinkle. This year, unless you were one of the 16 teams selected to host, you cannot host a Super Regional. Even if you're a higher seed among two surviving teams, this has to do with COVID protocols and all of that. So if Old Dominion wins tonight, whoever wins the Dallas Baptist, Oregon State, Fort Worth Regional may be going to Columbia, South Carolina to play Old Dominion. But if Virginia wins, and say Dallas Baptist wins, Virginia may come to Fort Worth. It would probably be at one of those two places. So it's a bizarre situation there. Stanford lost late last night to UC Irvine. The Anteaters won 8-4, so they have to play one more time. 9 o'clock tonight, and Oregon and LSU. LSU not dead yet. They beat Oregon, and they have to play one more time. So there it is, a whole bunch of if-necessary stuff to be played today. I'll tell you what's necessary. We have to check in with Mike Roach, Horns 24/7 recruiting editor. That's next when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Stepping on the back, Murphy Staley. That ends the ball game. The Texas Longhorns in dominant fashion sweep through the Austin Regional, scoring double-digit runs in all three ball games. The Longhorns win this one over Fairfield 12-2, and Texas will be at home to host the Super Regionals.
Longhorn postseason baseball. Every pitch, every out, every run, and every long ball on the Horn.
This is Light the Tower on the Horn. Craig Way, Jeff Howe with you. Coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, David Pierce, head baseball coach at Texas. We have coming up in a few minutes, we'll bring you our Inconceivable segment. But right now, it's time for the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
So we talked a lot about baseball, so I take it this is going to be football-driven in a very busy football weekend.
Strictly Gridiron. It is Monday, so we'll go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. Welcome in Mike Roach, Horns 24/7 recruiting editor. And I have breaking news on this front.
Yes?
Mike missed the 8 a.m. deadline for the Stampede.
Nuh-uh.
Only because There was so much good stuff in there, he ran it Sunday night instead of Monday morning.
How's that for your setup there? Did he read that script according to how you wrote it out for him there, Mike?
Yeah, this is beautiful. I was sitting there, I'd written everything up and gave our board the option of if they wanted a night release or a day release next day. And of course, I should have known it was overwhelming. A vote for the Sunday night release.
Bring it down. We need it now. Okay. So with that in mind, here's what I'd like you to do, Mike. And then I know Jeff is going to, it has certain specific questions with regard to certain specific recruits. But what I would like you to do, so folks have a greater appreciation for the yeoman's work that you put in, give everybody just kind of an overview, if you can, on your chronology of how this weekend went for you in terms of keeping track and visiting with those who are doing the visiting and how it all unfolded. I know I'm hitting you with this right out of the gate, but if you can kind of give everybody a little bit of a chronology of how your weekend went and who you were dealing with and visiting with and monitoring and all that sort of thing, I'd love for folks to hear this.
Yeah, so it's it was a little different just in the sense that I was also working the SMU Mega Camp both days and was there from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Saturday and 9 a.m. to about 5 p.m. yesterday. So I was trying to do all those things in the middle of being at that camp. But, you know, for me, I don't love to bother sources or kids while they're on their visit. I think it's you know, those visits should be kind of focused, driven from you know, the coaching or the staff side and also from the recruit side. So, you know, if somebody shoots me something, I'll definitely put it up there. But I'm not actively reaching out to people during the course of the visit. You know, that said, there are a couple stories we were tracking this weekend as far as, you know, if guys were going to show up here or there. And you know, we did confirm with all the visitors once they had arrived on campus. But, you know, mainly what it was checking with parents, checking with high school coaches to see if they had heard back from, you know, their prospects or the people around them that are the closest to them. And just kind of filling it in. And then once I knew, I talked to a source yesterday who told me, you know, the visits are pretty much all done. And you could tell when they're done because the kids will start tweeting out their you know, official pictures from the weekend and everything. That's when we really started ramping it up. And I just had the thought that, like, yesterday seemed kind of crazy as far as hectic because there were five or six guys I had to reach out to all at once. And the next couple of weeks, I mean, we're going to be talking about 20 and 20, 25. So it's going to be a month to remember. But, yeah, it was kind of a – We changed the way we did coverage of it on the website. We did have a live thread, so we were dropping in just about everything we were hearing at that point to keep everybody, you know, engaged and watching for the rest of the weekend.
Mike, before we get to specific visitors, this was the first weekend Steve Sarkisian and this new regime have been able to host recruits on campus. Just overall, kind of 30,000-foot view, what was the feedback you got, good, bad, or indifferent, on just how this organization is on a visit weekend?
You know, I still really want to get down to the brass tacks with somebody and talk about how, you know, how the visit went kind of day by day, minute by minute, and kind of compare it to what I know the prior visits were. So I don't have that great a detail yet, but the feedback was really good. I mean, you know, I talking to Jeremy Patton, the Tenaha linebacker who was on the trip, you know, the biggest thing that he said to me was that there wasn't a lot of recruiting done on this trip, and that was something he actually liked. It was just, you know, his host was Jalen Ford. He said, we rarely talked about football. You know, I just asked him questions about the school and about being part of the program and things like that. And, you know, I felt he was real with me. They felt, you know, an authenticity from the coaching staff as well. And, you know, talking to a source of mine, it was kind of like, hey, you know, think about this. We're not even at full capacity for what we can do with so much under construction here. You know, we can't show off the locker rooms and the what the south end zone is going to be and things like that. So, you know, most of the kids I talked to this weekend gave the trip a 10 out of 10 or better. I can't imagine what it's going to look like when, you know, once they can show off all those things.
Mike, let's talk about Jeremy Patton. You mentioned him right there. He was one of – kind of the two guys I was most interested to hear the feedback from and find out how it went. Derrick Brown, the edge rusher from Texas High, being the other. And anybody that reads the Stampede on the site right now knows that, Mike, the visits went really, really good for both of those guys.
Yeah, it was so good for Texas that I would say they're, their biggest competition that we perceived in this race, Texas A&M, was dropped from the race yesterday. As Derrick Brown told me that he had canceled his Texas A&M visit and will instead take a trip to Texas Tech. I think there were some disagreements between him and the way the Texas A&M side handled their business that kind of precipitated that. But that's big news. I mean, Derrick told me yesterday that I asked him kind of what stood out, and he said there wasn't anything that didn't stand out. So I think Texas crushed it with him on the visit. They've done a great job. I think that they've done a good job winning over, not only Derrick, but his family and his high school coaches and things like that. And, Texas High, that was a place last year that had an All-American in Clayton Smith, and Texas lost out to Oklahoma. And, Derrick Brown's kind of next in that line. So, Texas being able to win over that school is certainly big news. So, I think for Texas, they came out of this weekend. It's important to note that when you talk to everybody on an official visit weekend, they all think it's the greatest weekend of all time, and they can't imagine it being better. But, talking to the kids, it sounds like it couldn't have gone better this weekend.
Mike, I'll kind of have you go rapid fire through the rest of the visitors here in just a sec. But one guy that's really interesting is Trevante Citizen, the running back from College Prep in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Texas already has a running back commit in Jaden Blue, and in the second hour we'll get into the Keelan Robinson transfer from Alabama. We know Bijan Robinson has at least one more season beyond that in this program. So, Mike, we talk about just Steve Sarkisian stacking talent at running back. Is this just another indication, this Trevante Citizen recruitment, of, hey, they're good, but they're just going to go ahead and try to make their best position group on offense even better?
Yeah, absolutely. And, they put themselves in position with a lot of those guys, with not only Trevante Citizen, who I heard, went very well, DeAnthony Gatson, another visit that, heard great things on the running back from Newton. They'll have Tavoris Jones on campus later in the year. They're still talking with a couple of other guys. I mean, I don't think it's out of the question that Jamarian Miller from Tyler Legacy makes a visit this summer. I think that you could even see him go after a guy that's already committed, like Relique Brown, who's committed to Oklahoma from modern day. So all those guys have remained in contact with Texas. And I think that, for Sark right now, there's no too many amount of playmakers he can get on campus. I think that that's kind of the focus. And, you saw that with using a transfer spot on Keelan Robinson.
Mike, kind of wrap this up, the visit weekend, and again, you can get over to Horns 24/7 and check out the Stampede for a really in-depth, thorough report on what Mike is discussing right now. But Mike, just kind of go one by one, everybody that we haven't discussed, and just kind of where things stand with those prospects in Texas coming out of the weekend.
Yeah, so we talked about Citizen. I think Texas has made their statement in that recruitment. It's rare you see a Louisiana kid leave LSU, but that sounds like what's going to happen. I think he'll go out of state, and it sounds like it could come down to Texas or Texas A&M. So, like I said, Texas made their statement, but they're going to have to hope that holds, through him taking visits to USC and Arkansas and Texas A&M as well. DeAnthony Gatson is a guy that I think if Texas really leans on, they get him. I think they came out of the weekend probably in pole position for Gatson, Brown, and Patton. And I think if they lean on Gatson, they can get him. I think what they're doing right now is maybe looking at the board and saying, who else, what do we think we can get at the running back position, and where do we think we want to push to take that second back? So, I think that one's in a little bit of wait and see. Bishop Thomas, the defensive tackle from Orlando, is a guy I didn't hear a ton about. Still digging there. Talked to a source beforehand who felt like, Texas could really put itself in a strong position coming out of there. And then, one of the bigger notes was Nuafe Tuialamaka from California. who came into the visit kind of a Notre Dame lean, I would say at least 70-30 Notre Dame, and talked to a source yesterday who told me that that is much more of a 50-50 race at the moment. So Texas has kind of put itself back in that race. Now, he will go to Notre Dame next week, so they always have the chance to extend it, but, you know, those are important. And then, you know, an unofficial visitor that came in over the weekend was Cole Hudson, kind of unexpected and very fortuitous for Texas that Arizona State was paired in the Austin Regional because Cole's dad played baseball at Arizona State. So they decided to come down and watch the team. And while they were there, Cole got to meet the coaches and spend some time with the staff and really loved it. And then he's going to come back next week for his official visit. So they're going to get him on campus 2 weekends in a row and have the opportunity to build on that excitement. And, you know, talking to his dad, he just raved about the unofficial trip. And Kyle Flood sat with them for 2 straight, you know, full baseball games and spent time with the family, and that really meant a lot to him. So, it's really, really exciting weekend in Austin, for sure.
Yeah, De'Anthony Gadsden, the Newton running back, and then Cole Hudson, obviously the offensive lineman out of Frisco. That was, Craig, you were there. That mm-hmm. dish Saturday night, that's as electric as I've seen it in a really long time.
Absolutely. Last night was also very good, but Saturday night, I think, was a true highlight. It was something else. And, of course, Mike Roach is always a highlight when he's with us. Appreciate you taking the time, Mike.
No problem, fellas. It was a fun weekend with that and the SMU camp. It felt like recruiting is kind of back to normal. We had basically a coaches convention in Dallas. Every coach in the country seemed to be there. So,
it'll be great. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. We'll look forward to next week.
All right. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, Mike.
That's Mike Roach, recruiting editor, Horns 24/7. Very busy weekend.
Like he said, you know, an electric dish, recruiting, you know, camps are back open, coaches getting out a little bit. I mean, it's... We're making that wide turn back into normalcy, Craig.
No doubt.
And it feels good.
All right. You know what feels good? An inconceivable story. And it's got a Florida twist.
Okay.
We'll look forward to that. I know it's Monday, but it's a little bit of carryover. We've got to have that.
Okay.
You know, when our very loyal listenership contributes to Inconceivable and involves Florida, it has to be invoked.
We'll call it a Florida hangover Monday.
I like it. I like it. That's next with Light the Tower here on the Horn.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable means it's always brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his outstanding staff at Austin Orthopedics. They specialize in the prevention as well as treatment of sports-related injuries. Check them out on the web at austin-orthopedics.com. You guys remember the movie Snakes on the Plane? You remember that?
Hell Samuel yeah. L. Jackson, how can you forget that classic? That's an awesome movie.
Yes, Monday to Friday, Snakes on the Plane.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen the clean version?
The clean version.
It's, I'm tired of these monkey-fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane.
Yeah, that was the deal. Well, don't know if they were actually yelling that out, but we had a real snakes on a plane issue.
Ooh.
And it was like several.
Ooh.
Like rattlesnakes.
What?
Yeah. However, hold on. The plane was empty. It was a Qantas A380 jet parked in a California desert. See, since the start of the pandemic, thousands of planes from airlines around the world have been grounded, and some of those temporarily have been moved to some hot and dry, arid places. They're ideal conditions for aircraft storage. That's
really?
Why they park them. Yeah.
Okay.
But
I wouldn't have thought that.
As airplane or jet maintenance workers have discovered, such climates often come with unwanted and occasionally deadly inhabitants. The Australian airline Qantas has revealed that engineers tasked with maintaining its fleet of A380 super jumbo jets stored in California's Mojave Desert have had to come up with a simple but effective system to protect themselves from the area's venomous rattlesnakes. Like, they're all in the plane and like up in the engines and stuff like that. So it was really happening.
Enough is enough! I have had it with these monkeys! monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane.
That's
yes.
It. Yeah, the monkey fighting snakes on the Monday to Friday plane. Samuel L.
You know, I, Craig, I bought a ticket to that movie just for
did
that.
You really?
Just for that one line. I waited like an hour and 40 minutes. And once it was said, I was good.
You had
got
it
my
there.
Money's worth.
Well, the area of the Mojave Desert.
It's like the training montage in Rocky. You know it's coming. You're just waiting for it.
Waiting for it. The area is known for all the rattlesnakes. They love to curl up around the warm rubber tires and in the aircraft wheels and brakes, according to Qantas. Every aircraft has its own designated, this is the actual term, wheel whacker. It's a repurposed broom handle as part of the engineering kit, complete with each aircraft's registration written on it. So prior to any landing gear inspections, the workers walk around the plane, stomping their feet and tapping the wheels with the wheel whacker to scare off any slumbering snakes. So we've encountered several rattlesnakes and also some scorpions, but the wheel whacker does its job and they usually scuttle off. So,
did I tell you I killed a scorpion at the house the other day?
No. Got one, did you?
I didn't freeze it like you did and be all psychotic about it. I just hit
crushed You it. Also didn't get stung by it, too.
Didn't get stung. I just, you know, grabbed the nearest shoe and disposed of it.
So. Okay. All right.
Figured you'd enjoy that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, Craig's enemy, the scorpion, his sworn enemy.
It's just one of them. It's definitely one of them. No doubt about it. Okay, so got this story. This one actually came our man Bobby A, who texted it to you and to me and the Snoop. I don't know if you guys had time to read it, but it came from Barstool Sports of all places. Right, the headline: a naked Florida woman completely trashed an Outback by smashing a zillion wine bottles and glasses. I mean, that in itself.
Boy, I wish we had
headline.
More time to get into that. That is, wow.
Yeah, I mean, where do you go with it? Well, Ocala, Florida. It's in that central Florida area where we've seen some crazy things happen.
Man.
Charged with aggravated battery after being found naked and erratically throwing alcohol bottles at Outback and Moho Grill near Silver Springs.
I think if you're naked in public, anything you do should be considered erratic.
Yeah, that's a good point. An Ocala Police Department officer responded to Moho Grill on Silver Springs Boulevard because the reports of 53-year-old Tina Kindred, quote, acting out of control, end quote. The report stated the female was topless and banging on tables and windows. Kindred had flipped over a few tables and was last seen trying to get into a customer's car. She was found driving recklessly in the parking lot before exiting the parking lot. And naked woman there, naked Florida woman there smashing bottles and glasses. She, the one employee just kind of standing back and observing it all there.
She's like Connie Corleone in The Godfather.
Okay.
She's breaking out of...
Yeah, okay, the China. Yeah, okay. I see where you're going with that now.